Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knock-O-Nation podcast show. Oh, Knock-O-Nation podcast show.
It's another episode of the Knock-O-Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's JT Holton. The Braves have officially won a postseason series, JT. This one's a real one. There's no questioning this one. There's no debating it like it's a wild card. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. This was a
real deal
postseason series. The Braves, the Braves won it. JT, the Braves have not lost a postseason game yet this year.
Wow.
At all.
As Ric Flair once said, to paraphrase, Miami Marlins, I spent more money last year on spilt liquor than you made. You're talking to the Rolex-wearing, diamond ring-wearing, jet-flying, limousine-riding, kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time keeping these alligators down. Atlanta Braves baseball. Whew, it's fantastic right now, isn't it, buddy? Man, that was fun. That was fun to watch. That was fun.
Yeah, man. It's I was meditating on it tonight. I think I texted it to you guys tonight, JT. I don't think I realized how much I missed a team with attitude and swagger. Like not afraid to be a little bit of a-holes, you know, a little bit. Not over the top, but they're not afraid to pick a fight. Not afraid to have a little outside narrative to the story. Not just all about your business. We're going to be professionals all the time. The selfie taking, bat flipping, badasses. I like it. You know, like it's kind of fun to pull for that team. Atlanta hasn't been that team in 20 years. You know, and even when Atlanta was good, after like 98, Atlanta had very little swagger. They were like the straight laced good kids. Yes. They were like the Catholic school.
Very
boys,
vanilla.
You know? No, but.
Very
yeah, like
plain,
you didn't have a lot of bad boys on the team, but like when Deion Sanders came, that was bad boys
that
on
the
team. You know,
that was very a Schuerholz way of running things, the Braves way. You know, the Braves way. Was
yeah,
very...
but Schuerholz wasn't even afraid of like some attitude. Not back in the day, like Glavin coming in and saying, "Y'all get me a run because they're not."
Yeah,
getting
yeah.
One. You know,
but,
like,
I mean
like,
the extracurriculars, like you know you've. If you've read Schuerholz's book, how he kind of soured on Dion with the whole two sports thing,
yeah,
that kind of stuff, and well, Tom Glavin was a BA, no doubt, but he was a BA that was completely dedicated to his craft as well,
sure,
and yeah, it did get kind of vanilla,
but
got plain.
But Maddox was swaggy. I mean, I think a lot of people we didn't have Twitter.
You might be the only person I've ever heard. Describe Greg Maddux as swaggy. The guy wore like accountant glasses and picked
and
purposefully picked his nose when the camera was on him. No, I mean look, and he's a total weirdo and has a potty mouth, as we all know. But I don't think to the outsider he comes off as swaggy.
But I think to other baseball players he did.
Yeah, maybe
like,
in a different way.
He was kind of a jerk to other teams. Like he wasn't like when he hit somebody and people threatened to charge the mound, like he wasn't backing down. You know, like Greg Maddux.
Ask Chipper Jones about what happens
when
you know, get in his way fielding a pop up. I mean, he'll tell you. He
right.
Had a certain attitude, you know, and a certain thing that he demanded from his teammates.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year's team is just, it's just fun, man. It's just fun from top to bottom.
Is.
The personality. Even when you got guys like Freddie Freeman. Travis d'Arnaud and Adam Duvall, who seem to have no personality at all. Nick Markakis.
Yeah.
But the Ozunas, the Albies, Acuñas, man. Awesome.
And I think the mix is important. I think the mix is really perfect on this team. Because you need some guys to say, hey, focus. You need that Nick Markakis moment of, okay, guys, we have a lot of fun, but focus right now. Keep your focus. You
absolutely.
Know? And then, like, somebody else to – turn up the swagger, you know, the Marcell Ozuna has been like the perfect, like Marcell Ozuna and Nick Markakis sound like the worst match ever. And yet I think like they personify exactly how this baseball team is. Like, you got professional at bat, never crack a smile, Nick Markakis, very work ethic guy. And then you got Marcell Ozuna, who hits a home run and takes a selfie on the way to first. You know, like,
yeah.
Like, I think this team's a mixture of that, and I think that's awesome. I think it keeps them relaxed, but it keeps them tight in just enough way too. So, yeah, this team's been a ton of fun to watch. Not to mention, nothing about this team feels like a foregone conclusion.
No, I mean, when you factor in, look, I mean, we've won 4 games by shutout out of 5.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks ago, we were like, I don't know how we're going to pitch in the playoffs. Right, we got one pitcher. Exactly. We got one pitcher. I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, nothing's foregone because let's say the Braves win the World Series this year. Our kids are going to be like, Dad, tell us about the 2020 Braves. Like, when did you know they had all that great pitching? We're going to be like, about 2 weeks before the playoffs started, you know?
Right.
Like, when did you know Ian Anderson was good? Like, September. Like, this was not the 95 Braves where you got 3 established, yeah, legit all-stars. This was like, this is just happening in front of our eyes.
Bo's going to be like, Dad, when did you know Kyle Wright could pitch? And you're going to be like, well, one start before the playoffs, and then he, like, threw 6 innings of no hit baseball.
He just did it.
You know, like,
son, we were watching Robbie Erlin pitch that year. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Tommy Malone was starting games.
We were considering letting Tommy Malone start playoff games.
It was horrible. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The fact that these guys emerged, not only is it great for this year, that's awesome, but, man, I feel so much better about 2021. Knowing that we don't have to fill, like, 4 blank spaces in our rotation coming into next year. Because that's how it looked a few months ago. So, that's nice.
And this is the awesome thing about all this is, one, I felt like the boys pretty much – it was very obvious the Atlanta Braves were on a mission and the NLDS was not their goal.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't overlooking it, but they very much were like, this is just a stop on the way. We're not done yet. Now – they haven't played the Dodgers. We'll see where that goes, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. You know, that's another story. But this team said, they ain't no way the Marlins are putting us out of the playoffs. No. This ain't happening.
Yeah. They were, I think they were very happy to get the Marlins. They're very familiar with them and had the confidence. Yeah, you look at this year, we won the season series, but it wasn't overwhelming. But if you look at 2019, 2018, we made our bread by beating the Marlins. That's where we placed ourselves in the division.
In the last 19 series against the Marlins have won 1.
Yeah. So that's literally where we won the 2018-2019 division titles, was at the hands of the Marlins. That's how we separate ourselves from the pack. Now, as far as the Dodgers go, I ain't scared of the Dodgers. I don't think anybody on the team is scared of the Dodgers. The Dodgers have had so many opportunities to stake their claim as the best team in baseball and haven't been able to do it. These guys are perennial chokers. Mm-hmm. This is what they do. This is what they do. This is who they are. They are a decent team with a lot of money, and they can sign some pretty good-looking free agents. Doesn't make them a great baseball club. I think the Braves can take it right to them.
That's a little bolder. That's a little bolder than I'll go. I think they're a great baseball club, but it doesn't make them invincible.
They're clearly invincible. I'll go that they far have at least one World Series to their name, so they're clearly invincible.
Right.
I don't think there's anything we should be afraid of. Honestly, we are just as good of a team as they are. They should be worried about us.
I think so. I think you are right 100%. And I think my only concern is the same concern we had coming into the playoffs. I love Ian Anderson. I love Kyle Wright. I've not seen them pitch against a good offense at all. You know, very little. So we'll see.
And they've never seen never seen them before either.
I'm excited to be right. Exactly. And that's a benefit. I think when I look at that series, and we'll get more into predictions probably next week. But as of today, when I look at that series, I think a short series favors the Braves. I think a long series favors the Dodgers. So I think if it's a 5 game World Series, I think the Braves won it. I think if it's a 7 game World Series, I think the Braves lost it. Because I think what you're looking at is, I think you get a start out of Fried, start out of Anderson, start out of Wright. right? And you hope you can win two of those three. And then maybe you sneak one more. So I don't know. Five or six games. I think less than seven games favors the Braves. I think more than that, I don't think the Braves have the pitching to go seven, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see. I tell you what, though. Monday night, I'm canceling all my plans. I don't know when we'll record. We'll have to figure it out. Monday's usually a recording night for us. But I'm going to be watching Clayton Kershaw, Max Fried, you know. And then, you know, I watch some Monday Night Football, too. But that's where I'm going to be. So I'm excited for that, man. This is a chance for Max Fried to put himself on the map from a national perspective, man. I don't know if everybody is on the Max Fried train the way we are here in Atlanta. But I think Monday night is his chance to come out and show the world, hey, pay attention to me, you know, because Clayton Kershaw's had this time to shine. Clayton Kershaw's a future Hall of Famer. I used to watch Clayton Kershaw pitch for the Jacksonville Suns when I was in college. He was like a 20-year-old, and we were like, man, this kid's going to be awesome. Had no idea he was going to be this good. But Clayton Kershaw's also had a rocky career in the postseason. He's up there in age. He's got a janky back. These are all true statements.
He's also been really good the last 2 years in the postseason.
Yeah, he's going to be really good again. Because against this offense, you're going to be really good.
Yep, but this is just me saying that I'm not sitting here giving it to the Dodgers. I'm not saying that I think the Dodgers are even the favorites here. I'm just saying they're a really good baseball team. So it should be some really good baseball. JT, I do have to ask you this. I think this is a super important question. Do you believe that the Earth is flat?
Absolutely not. And here's why.
Okay.
What is the benefit? Conspiracy theories have to have a motive, just like anything else in the world. A murder, anything has to have a motive. Why would something be? Something is, okay, that's true, but why does it have to be that way? What is the motive? If you came out tomorrow and said the Earth is actually shaped like a triangle, I'd go, okay. It doesn't affect anything. It doesn't make a difference. Why would we need to lie about the shape of the Earth? Who benefits from that?
Because, JT, you know, like, you know, it's the round people conspiracy. It's racist against flat people.
That's the number one needle I pop in that flat Earth balloon is, why would they do it? Who does it benefit?
Oh, and they have tons of theories of why it should be done.
Yeah. Okay, and what would it change? If the Earth
so the reason
cubed,
we're talking about this...
If the Earth
for
was
those,
cubed, I would still live my life the same way. It doesn't matter.
For those that have missed out on it, the reason we're talking about this was during the broadcast today, Adam Wainwright was... Wasn't it Adam Wainwright? Wainwright.
Who was in the booth?
Who was in the booth?
Adam Wainwright, and AJ Pierzynski.
Okay, it was Waino. So Waino this year, he said that this year he spent half the year arguing with half of his team about the Earth not being flat, because he said half the Cardinals team believes the Earth is flat. And he specifically said Paul DeJong.
Oh, Young DeJong.
Believes, and he's like a super smart baseball player, too, like this big analytics guy, and he believes the Earth is flat. Maybe that's why they're not in the playoffs anymore. But, yeah, it was hilarious. It was a hilarious discussion. For the record, Waino totally deserves a broadcasting job.
Totally.
At some point in the future.
Glenn County's finest right there, Adam Wainwright. I don't get it. I'm a conspiracy theory guy. There's several that I believe. I believe Kurt Cobain was murdered, and I believe Tupac Shakur is alive, and I will defend those things. I believe Stevie Wonder can see, and I will go to my grave defending those points. I will die on those hills. Flat Earth, I'm just, why? Why? What's the benefit? Who cares? What a bunch of dorks. This only cements the belief that the St. Louis Cardinals are the dumbest baseball team, the dumbest fan base in Major League Baseball. Cardinals fans, you're stupid. Your team is dumb. And I'm glad they're out of the postseason.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's JT.
And by the way, did you know Sam Musial had 1,818 hits at home and 1,818 hits on the road? That's the only fact any St. Louis Cardinals fan will ever tell you, and they'll act like no one's ever heard it before. I just want to beat them to the punch, take the wind out of their sails. We know Sam Musial was good.
Yeah.
Cardinals fans can suck it.
No, Waino and AJ Przinski was a ton of fun in the booth.
Przinski's good too, man.
Waino actually sharing the story of Brian Snicker charging out of the dugout one time in the minor leagues and telling the umpire that he was going to have to throw him out of the game. That the umpire was doing a great job, but that he needed his team fired up, so he was going to have to throw Snit out of the game, which is hilarious because Robbie, my father-in-law, when he came on the show with us, said he did the exact same thing in college and that he went and was nose-to-nose with the umpire, and he's like, "You're doing a great job, but you got to throw me out of this game." And the dude's like, "I'm not throwing you out of the game, Robbie." And Robbie's like, "You're going to throw me out of this game."
And I bet it happens a lot more than we know.
And Robbie's like, Robbie said, "I finally went over and grabbed a base and like threw a base and kicked dirt on home plate just so he would have to kick me out of the game."
I'm sure that's happened a lot, to be honest with you, because sometimes you just need to fire up your team and you don't even really believe in what you're arguing. You're just like, "I got to cause a scene. I got to fire these guys up and I'm going to take the bullet for them," and you know.
Yeah, so Robbie told me that they always played this local team when he was a college coach. They always played this local team in Anderson, and Anderson would get a big lead, and then they would come. He would get thrown out of the game, and they would come storming back, and his team would win. So he said this was like the regionals, and this was the second or third year they played in regionals or something like that. And so they go to the game, and it's like the second or third inning, okay? And Anderson has a big lead. They're up like 3-0 or something. And Robbie said, "I'm standing there, and I'm like kind of thinking, is it time for me to kind of fire the boys up yet?" He said, about that time, here comes Anderson's manager storming out on the field, yelling at umpires, and gets himself thrown out of the game. And Robbie's like, "What is he doing? There's no reason for this." After the game, as he was leaving, he walked by Robbie's dugout and said, "I got thrown out first today." You guys
beaches
can't
in
got
the
a chance.
No, you can't do it.
He just got thrown out. You can't. He did it. So, and sure enough, they went on and won the game. And so,
the game within funny story. You know, baseball, but they always talk about the game within the game, and it's
Hey, on top of that, speaking of that, JT, what a brilliantly managed series by.
Yeah,
Snicker.
Where the snit haters?
I can't point to a single move I felt like he did wrong.
Where the snit haters at? You know? Again, when you don't give up any runs, it's hard to have a lot of haters out there. First team ever in Major League Baseball history to throw back-to-back shutouts in the playoffs. Twice. That's credit to Jason Stark for that tidbit. That man knows everything as far as baseball trivia. That's never been done in the history of baseball. So back-to-back shutouts twice in the same playoffs. It's hard to have haters when the other team doesn't score, but yeah, what move, even in game, what move do you question Snit on? There is none. He has managed this perfectly. Perfectly. He's played the bullpen perfectly.
I think the only moment in the entire series that I was like, "Ooh, I don't know if I would have done that," was when he pulled Anderson yesterday.
Yeah.
With the only 5 2/3.
Yeah. I mean, he was breathing heavy. He looked laboring out there. And I think it was a 10 pitch at bat with Aguilar out there. So,
I can defend it all day long. I was just saying that was the only time I thought, I don't know if I would have done that, but I don't really blame him. Well, you know, like, that was the
Snit
only
said
time
post
that I
game, if he had gotten him in 3-4 pitches, he would have let him go. But it was a 10 pitch at bat, and he seemed to be laboring a little bit. And after that 10 pitch at bat, he was like, probably a little drained physically and mentally by that point. So, you know, again, play to your strengths. We got a great bullpen. Darren O'Day's been great this year. Boom. And there you go. And yeah, that's the only thing. I mean, but again, people are so critical of a manager. But when your guys are giving you 6 innings of shutout ball, you can't be critical of the manager. Yeah, you know, so. Yeah. Again, the manager gets way more credit when they win and too much blame when they lose. Because, all of a sudden, Snit's not a dummy when guys are going out there and pitching lights out. Well, funny how that works out. You know what I mean? Like, Snit's a big dummy when we're giving up runs left and right and our bullpen's struggling and our starting pitching absolutely blows. Well, yeah. I mean, Snit looks worse then. But, you know, the Twitter managers go into detail over, you know, "Hey, you shouldn't have done this in the third inning against Cincinnati in a game in the middle of July." Well, where are they at now? You know, I mean, the guy's in the playoffs. He's got his team playing the best baseball ever. that they played this whole year at the best possible time. And yeah. And the non-analytical stuff, the things you can't measure, like how much this team wants to win for Snit, how much he loves them, and how much they believe in him, and how much they play hard for him, off the charts, man. Off the charts. You see his quote, his quote after the game today about, you know, this team has been a hard year for everybody, and we're just glad we can entertain. These guys are fun, and we're glad our fans are entertained. We look forward to entertaining them more. I mean, that just speaks volumes of the kind of guy he is and his perspective on things, man. He's just out there letting these guys have fun and put on a show for everybody at home that's had a hell of a year. And that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep. Hey, getting back to the game for today, Kyle Wright, man. We really haven't, like, focused in on him, but how good was Kyle Wright? Like, his slider today, which is the pitch he was known for in the minor leagues, but has not had at all since he's been pitching in the pros. Now, some of that's he changed the size of the rubber he was throwing off when he got to the pros, and he's been working on some other things. But his slider today was amazing. It was out of this world good. And on top of that, he starts throwing a freaking slurve, like a hard curve. And I'm like, I've never even seen you throw that pitch. Like, maybe he's thrown it, but, like, it's never stood out. And then he was locating his fastball. Just it was all there. He never looked like he got rattled despite letting one or two guys on base. And let's be honest, most of the guys that got on base, with the exception of the one or two walks that he had, most of the guys were dinks and dunks. And the walks, I think there was only one walk that was like he kind of lost control for a minute and kind of walked a guy. Before that, like, anything, the umpire was just calling a super tight strike zone. You know, like, I didn't think Kyle was really missing his spots as much as the ump was just calling a super tight zone.
Yeah, he got squeezed a little bit. And I love that there was.
Yeah, I mean, and he was squeezing both teams. Yeah, I'm not complaining about the umpire. It was just saying, you know,
they didn't know what was going on. They had to have a review to see what the count was. I mean, they didn't know what they were doing.
There's plenty to complain about with the umpire, but his strike zone wasn't
there
really
was a
problem.
There was a moment in the season where he decided, I'm going to go from the far left side of the rubber. And that's when everything clicked. If he was any more further left, he'd be Kamala Harris. He just zoomed in from that point. Nice. And that slider you were talking about, tailing away from right-handed hitters, just gnarly, man. Just gnarly stuff. And that's when the light bulb really seemed to go off for him. He really started to figure it out. And he felt comfortable from that standpoint. And he started out the game from the far left section of the rubber and was just on from the get-go. And, yeah, he had a couple bumps early on. But, man. Can't complain about six shutout innings, three hits. Man, it's come around. He's showing why he's the number five pick in the draft.
And apparently he credits Josh Tomlin, I believe it was, with telling him that he should try the other side of the rubber. I believe it was Tomlin that he gave credit to that for. It was one of the relievers, and I think it was Tomlin. So that's kind of really cool. Tomlin, while he didn't pitch in this series, he's had such a huge effect, I believe, on this bullpen, on this entire team all year. I was a little surprised not to see him today. I thought with the seven runs that they might just throw him out there just
some
to
relief,
let him get a couple
get
innings
work.
In. You know?
I would imagine there's going to be a little game on Saturday, a little, scrimmage, basically. And I don't know, man. It was fun to see Bill Shanks, friend of the show, noted fan of us, brought up a good point. He said, man, these Vanderbilt pitchers, they know what they're doing. So it's not a matter of, you know, he's damaged goods, he's got bad habits you have to fix and all these other things. You get a guy from Vanderbilt, I mean, look at the track record from Sonny Gray to David Wright to Mike Minor to Walker Buehler. I mean, they know what they're doing at Vanderbilt. And this kid, there's a reason he was the number five pick in the draft. It just took him a little while to figure it out and find it. And I think really find his self-confidence. And then he got in a spot where he's comfortable, and now he can just let his talent shine. And I think that's what you're seeing now is just the beginning of the Kyle Wright that we're going to have for the next couple of years in Atlanta. I mean, I'm excited for it because not only did we find Ian Anderson along the way, but now Kyle Wright, and you get Mike Soroka back, and Max Fried's a Cy Young candidate, and my goodness gracious. Lucas Sims said we couldn't develop pitchers. I don't know, Lucas.
Yeah.
The proof is in the pudding, buddy. Maybe you just weren't good enough.
Yep.
Seems like we can develop pitchers a little bit, you know?
And then, you know, you got guys like Jacob Webb who looked elite today. You know, you got guys. a lot of these bullpen guys, AJ Minter, boy, has he had a year. Mm-hmm. You know, AJ Minter has come back, turned around the entire direction of his career. I mean, we were at the point last year, we were looking at AJ Minter and thinking, is he a complete bust at this point?
Yeah.
And just basically a middling reliever, you know, like a middle of the road reliever that may have a good year somewhere in the future. I think, one, we don't understand how much he got nicked up in that spring training little car wreck thing that happened that last year. And I think it took him a whole year to get over that. And he's just looked dynamite this year. I mean, just outstanding, scary, outstanding, best in baseball kind of look. And he's not even being used as an eighth or ninth inning guy.
No.
You know, like, that's what's amazing.
No, we've come a long way from the Shane Carls and Jesse Biddles of the world in our bullpen. Yeah. And there was a point where AJ Minter was handed the closing job and just couldn't do it. And it had to go to Luke Jackson. You know, I mean, that's how bad off we were. Yeah. I'm not knocking Luke. I love Luke. But that's just where AJ was. He just wasn't in a good place, whether that's mentally or physically or whatever. Now, whatever it was that was ailing him is behind him, and maybe it's the mullet. I think it might be the mullet.
Yeah, the mullet's behind him for sure. There's no doubt about that. Definitely
behind him. Man, he's pitching like the dude we all thought he was. When AJ Minter first came up, you thought, this is our next Kimbrel.
Yeah.
You know, and here he is. So, and the fact that he's like our fifth best reliever is amazing. That's incredible.
To kind of put a bow on this series, two last statements. One, Travis d'Arnaud is playing out of his mind right now.
Yeah, did they give an MVP award for the NLCS or the NLDS?
I don't know.
But that's your MVP right there.
Yeah, and I do know this. He just missed another three-run homer today by like
6 inches. He thought he had it walking off the mound.
If that ball is 6 inches right, that's another three-run homer.
He pimped it out walking to first. He thought he had it. And which is crazy because it was 6 inches above the top of the zone. I don't know how he made contact to that. That was amazing.
Yeah, d'Arnaud hit that ball, and it was crushed so far. I thought it was going to bust out one of the windows in the back of the stadium.
It reminded me of a home run that Evan Gattis hit when he first came up. We were playing at Philly, and Roy Oswalt threw one like a foot over the strike zone. It was at chin level, and Gattis just clubbed it out. So how do you hit a ball up there? d'Arnaud has been fantastic, man. Like, holy cow. I know we've gone on and on about him during this recap series, but, man, holy cow. What a great addition he's been. I'm so glad he's – and we get him back next year. He signed a two-year deal. So,
yeah,
super excited for that. He's definitely your MVP of the NLCS, no doubt.
Yeah, and I will say this. Is there any concern for Freddie Freeman? He played – really tight this series. Like .075 batting average, pretty much did nothing. I think he walked several times, which is awesome. But
he's had two hits in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm fine with it. He's had two hits and we're 5-0. Imagine if we start getting production from Freddie Freeman. You know, he's too good to be worried about. I mean, at this point, what are you worried about? I mean, he's Freddie Freeman. I mean,
yeah, and he hasn't had good playoff series traditionally, so I'd like to see him kind of loosen up a little bit, play a little better. You know, I'm not yelling at him. I'm just saying I'd like to see actual Freddie Freeman show up sometime.
Yeah, I mean,
nice.
It wouldn't hurt, no doubt.
Yeah. But there's that. I will say this. For the Braves to be a team that strike out an awful lot, they also walk a lot.
Yeah.
Now, the bottom of the order, not so much, but the top, they walk. They get on base. They'll strike out swinging if they think it's a good pitch. But it's not like they go extended periods of times and don't walk either. Like Marcelo Zuna, Acuna, Freddie, all those guys are more than happy to take a walk if they think it's close.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they are. And that just goes to show their approach. They have a good mindset when they come to bat. You know, we've talked about – you know, Rich Kranitz and how good he's done. Is it Rick or Rich? I've heard both.
I think it's Rick.
Kranitz.
I think it's Rick.
What's his name? Cranny. I bet it's Cranny.
Yeah, they call him
Cranny. But Kevin Seitzer, we've been saying all year about what a heck of a job he's done his team. And of course, we all know how good Ron Washington is. I mean, defensively. I mean, these guys, Holy cow. We've got a great supporting cast of coaches, and I think Seitzer's done a heck of a job with these guys because we're not locked into this strikeout or homer mindset. You know, it's not an all or nothing, zero sum game when we come to the plate. It is a balanced approach where we take what other guys are giving you, and when pitchers make a mistake, we capitalize on it. And that takes a certain mindset when you come to plate. You have to be patient. You can't come up just wanting to clobber the ball every time. You've got to be take your pitches. You know, if it's not there, it's not there. But if it is, pounce. And they do a great job of that.
You know what was crazy today, JT? I watched the first inning, and Sixto Sanchez gets out of the inning in 5 pitches.
Yeah.
And I actually messaged the guys in the know-it-all group chat, and I messaged them, and I said, wow, the Braves are going to win big today. Because all 5 of those pitches, the ones they made contact with, it was hard contact. Yeah. It was his fastball was not moving. Mm-mm. It wasn't dancing. Now, they didn't have the timing perfect. They didn't hit the ball out of the park, and they didn't even get base hits. But the contact was there, and I said, ooh, he's going to have a long day. Like, I know it was only 5 pitches, but it was obvious from the first inning the Braves are going to eat this dude up today. Because unless something showed up in the second inning that he wasn't throwing in the first, I was like, that pitch right there, the only reason that they didn't take you deep in the first inning was the timing was just a hair off.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like you had them fooled. It was just like, their timing was
off. Sixto's got a great fastball. We're a great fastball hitting team. And he couldn't locate it all day. He was floating up in the zone the entire time. Yeah. We really just
Was straight.
Yeah, it was straight. It was not a lot of movement.
His fastball usually dances, and today it wasn't dancing.
Yeah,
it was
straight, a really flat fastball. It was up in the zone a lot, so really we just waited to force him to make a pitch that was hittable, and we could sit back and just let him. That's what's so frustrating. In the second inning, we had the bases loaded. Adam Duvall struck out on 3 pitches that none of the 3 were in the zone. You know, if he just left his bat in the dugout, we would have been up 1-0. Yeah,
100%.
And it was just okay. You got to have patience. You can't go. I know when the bases are loaded, nobody's out, and you're a home run hitter like Adam Duvall is. Your instinct is to, man, I'm gonna mash one, and we're gonna be up 4-0, and I'm gonna be the hero. And that's what happens when you get kind of overzealous. We did a good job of letting his pitch count rise up and forcing him into, you know, low percentage situations for a pitcher. You know, we let him get ahead in the count or get behind the count. And then you're looking at a 3-1 situation where, all right, we know what's coming. And with a flat fastball like that, it doesn't matter if you can throw it 99. They can time it.
Right,
they can time it in the majors, you know. As long as it's flat.
10 years ago?
Oh,
10 years ago, 99 would get you by.
Yeah.
Now 99 straight doesn't get by.
No,
you know, guys have just learned to hit it, and it's a testament to the game. JT, Ron DeSantis or Ron Santis? Is it DeSantis?
DeSantis.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
the governor of Florida has announced that full capacity stadiums are once again allowed in Florida. The Miami, Florida Dolphins. Florida, the Miami Dolphins. That's the word I'm looking for. They're going to ignore this and keep their cap at 13,000 fans, probably because they only have 13,000 fans left at this point. But it does make me wonder, Georgia Florida game.
No, right?
FSU Miami, Florida FSU. I don't know if
FSU Miami's already happened, Ken. It's already happened.
What are you thinking, buddy?
I'm thinking, I'm already going to be in Amelia Island for Georgia-Florida weekend, so now there's a chance I can get a ticket. I haven't gone a season without being at a Georgia game since 1989. So
wow.
I would like to keep the streak alive if at all possible, and that's one of my favorite games to go to. So being able to see a game in front of a live, full-capacity audience would be pretty cool because I didn't think that was going to happen. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think – even though the governor may allow it, I think, you know, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to say, okay, let's go for it. You know what I mean? So,
But it's Florida.
It's Florida, but I would still say hold your horses on that. I don't think Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, is going to say, okay, yeah, sure, go right ahead. I think they're still going to play with caution and keep it the way it is.
So my concern is this. I it's not COVID. My concern is how do you keep some level of fair play.
Yeah.
When Florida's allowed to have a full stadium and Georgia's not, or
and obviously Florida Georgia plays in Jacksonville. I'm using that as a hypothetical. You know, Florida as a full stadium and Alabama can't, you know, or Mississippi can't, or whoever, fill in the blank. That's a pretty significant advantage / disadvantage to, between stadiums.
I don't think it will happen. I think that this was a symbolic gesture by Ron DeSantis to say, we ain't scared of COVID. We're getting back to our regular scheduled programming. We're going on with our lives. Knowing full well that commissioners of leagues were still going to err on the side of caution. All right, so I'm looking at the games this week, and a couple of them jump out at me. I'll kind of just go through the SEC slate, and then we'll touch on Clemson and Miami, which is interesting too. Mm-hmm. So Nick Saban has never lost to an assistant coach, a former assistant of his. So he's beaten Kirby, he's beaten Jimbo, he's beaten Derek Dooley, he's beaten Lane Kiffin. He's got Lane Kiffin again this week in Alabama at Ole Miss. Alabama.
Didn't he lose to Clemson?
Yeah, but Dabo never coached for Nick Saban.
Oh, he didn't? Mm-hmm. I thought Dabo was an assistant for
Nick
at one
point. He played at Alabama.
Gotcha.
Alabama's a 24-point favorite. I think they roll here. I think Alabama needs to flex a little muscle, assuming they get this game off, because weather, you know, is kind of crazy around that area right now. So if they play the game, the Ole Miss defense looks a little suspect, to say the least. And Alabama, maybe they're looking ahead to Georgia a little bit. I mean, Alabama's going to win the game. It's just a question of how much. Kiffin's trying to play a little head games, making jokes in press conference about Nick Saban being old and stuff. But that's just, yeah, you know, it's just Lane being Lane. He's a fun dude, man. I don't think there's an SEC coach we'd enjoy hanging out with more than Lane Kiffin. Like, if we had one SEC coach on the show, I think we'd all vote for Lane Kiffin.
I don't know. I might vote Mike
Leach. Yeah, this should be like a 5-hour show, though. He'd talk about flat earth and all sorts of shit, you know? Arkansas plays Auburn. This is interesting. Now, Auburn's a 16.5-point favorite at home. Now, that Auburn team that played last Saturday, if they show up again this Saturday, Arkansas's beating them. And if this game was in Fayetteville, I think Arkansas might beat them. Remember, Arkansas was coached last year by Chad Morris, who's now the offensive coordinator at Auburn. I think Auburn will win, but, dude, that Auburn team that showed up last Saturday, whew, you can't give a performance
like
that.
I think Arkansas's defense is sneaky good. I don't know if their offense is good enough, but I think their defense is better than advertised.
I think they're much better coached. So, I think this year they're showing that Sam Pittman may not have a lot of skill players. He may not have a lot of sex appeal on that team, but he can coach them in the fundamentals. We're going to tackle better. We're going to block better, and that'll show up. And we're going to hold ourselves in games longer than we did last year.
Yeah. And with Arkansas being as close as it is to Texas, he's going to recruit pretty well there before too long.
Yeah.
So he's going to pull some kids that don't want to go play at Texas.
Yeah. Or Pittman can recruit my God, he's an excellent recruiter, man. He's going to bring in talent, and he's going to stock the cupboard for the next coach, because Pittman's in his late 60s. So he's going to stock the cupboard well for the next coach that takes over, and now they're taking over a program that's not near as talent depleted as it has been.
Right.
Florida's got to go to A&M. Now, that's an 11 o'clock start out there at College Station. A desperate A&M team needs to avoid a 1-2 start. And Florida, all the media hype, man, everybody is blowing up Florida. Like, they are the best thing ever. That offense, oh my gosh, have you ever seen a tight end like this? Kyle Trask is second in the Heisman right now. Oh my goodness, watch out for A&M, I'm just saying. Watch out.
A&M has not been impressive to me, but I agree it's a trap game. I think the thing that saves Florida here is no fans in the stands. I think if A&M has the, whatever they call themselves, the 12th man, whatever, they're pretty well known for having some rowdy fans out there. Maybe
Jimbo's a good coach. It's a talented team. They got a lot of returning talent back. They didn't lose a lot last year. They are a better team than what they have showed. Now, if they can get it all click, watch out. Because you have not seen the best.
Who's the better, over the next 5 years, NFL included, who's the better quarterback? Kyle Trask or Kellen Mond?
I don't think either one's starting in the NFL in 5 years. I will go with Kellen Mond. He's a much better athlete. Much better.
All right. Better. Wow. Well, you heard it here first, folks.
Well, I'm just saying. Tennessee at Georgia. This one could be nasty, man. This is a game with two good offensive lines, two solid defensive lines. Could be a rainy game.
It's going to be wet. It's going to be like 6 inches to 8 inches of rain wet. It's going to be nasty football game.
It all comes down to defense, and that Georgia defense is much better than the Tennessee defense. And I think we can scheme up enough. I don't know if we'll cover the 12.5, but hey, mailman delivers in the rain too, you know? I believe. I'm a believer.
That's true.
Say 10-point win.
It's going to be a sloppy game. It could be a trap game.
Say 21-14, 21-10, somewhere in there. Man, if that defense plays the way they did last week, Tennessee ain't got a shot. And there's no way Jaron Garantano is going to beat that defense. Mississippi State at Kentucky, a game absolutely no one cares about. Can Mike Leach get off the schneid there? I mean, they looked great against LSU, came back and fell flat on their face.
Yeah.
Kentucky, only a 2-point favorite here. Kentucky's 0-2. They fall hard in those games. But they lost both of them. I don't know. I feel like Kentucky's got to win this one. They've got to.
I think, and what's crazy is Kentucky's a good enough team they should be 2-0 instead of 0-2. Like, watching those games, both those games were winnable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Especially, you know, the Ole Miss game last week was ridiculous. Can't believe they lost that. LSU, Missouri.
I can't either.
LSU, now that they've got that one loss under their belt, and then, okay, they feel better win against Vanderbilt. 20.5 point favorites at Missouri. I don't think that's a problem for them. I think they're going to find their footing here. And they're not as bad as they looked against Mississippi State. I think that was just a bad situation. Their best player was out. They lost so much from last year. Missouri just doesn't leave much to be desired. South Carolina is at Vanderbilt this week. Oh, my. Can you imagine South Carolina loses to Vanderbilt? They're a 12-point favorite.
I can because I think with the rain, I think it could 100% happen. It really depends how wet that game ends up.
I think that Ray Tanner, who's the AD at South Carolina, wants every excuse in the world to keep Will Muschamp. He likes him personally, doesn't want to fire him. Man, if you lose to Vanderbilt, it's hard not to fire you about that. And then Clemson, Miami. This is interesting. Clemson doesn't get tested often, as we have let Cousin Kent know. Miami's legit. De'Arik King, superstar player, man. I think this is a coming out game for De'Arik King. I think Clemson wins, but Miami keeps it closer than Vegas says. I think Miami gives them all they can handle. It's in Death Valley, but minimum people in the stands. I think you can't just go from playing soft vanilla teams and then turn it on once every 7 weeks. You know, you have to be a little bit battle-tested. You have to be a little bit calloused. And Clemson is not calloused. They're soft. They got soft hands. As Captain Quinn said, you got city hands. You've been counting money your whole life. And that's Clemson. They got city hands. Look out for Miami. Miami's coming up with a lot to prove. No one respects them. They're number 7 in the country, and they're 15-point underdogs. Just saying. That's scary to me. If I'm a Clemson fan, that's worrisome. Just my take.
I think Miami's big scare here is I don't know if Miami's defense is good enough to stay with Clemson. I think their offense is probably good enough, maybe, but I'm not sure their defense is.
If they can keep running the ball the way they've run the ball, it might be one of those where you just control the ball, control the clock, slow the game down, lengthen every possession, and keep yourself in the game. Because Clemson's going to score, and you got to avoid the big play. They can do a good job of limiting the big play and keeping the chains moving on offense. They might look up in the fourth quarter and say, shoot, we're right in this thing. Which is more than a lot of teams can say against Clemson. That in itself is a win. I mean, honestly, covering the spread against Clemson is a win for anybody in the ACC lately. So, I don't know. Just the way I'm thinking things. Who knows?
Who knows?
All I know is Monday,
that's
we're going to play the Dodgers. in the freaking NLDS, man.
Dodgers.
Excited.
NLCS.
NLCS.
Or the yeah. or the Padres. I guess it could be the Padres. Padres. Let's go Padres. Okay. Drag that series out as long as possible. But it doesn't look likely, but I'd be fine with either team. I just hope the Padres can win a game or two. I'd just like to see. I would by the time this episode airs, it may already be officially the Dodgers. But as of us recording this, it is not officially the Dodgers. So let's hope for we'll a little see. More out of the Padres just to make it fun.
Yeah, why not?
Well, that's gonna do it for today's episode of the Nogomination Podcast Show. It's been a fun week, JT. NLDS champions. Headed for the NLCS. We talked Saved by the Bell this week. We talked a flat earth conspiracy theorist. And we talked about double D's. And double D's never let you down. This has been one heck of a week. JT, thanks for hanging out with me, buddy. Looking forward to next week. Nogomination, thank you for supporting the show. All you patrons, you make this thing happen. We appreciate it. If you guys would like to support the show and all this crazy content that we put out, we sure would appreciate it. You can do that by going to patreon.com/Nogomination and joining up to be a member of the nation. You can join at $5, at $9, or at $21. The $5 gets you an awesome sticker to go on your gear. The $9 gets you the sticker and a shout-out on the show, as well as some other perks. And the $21 gets you a shirt, a sticker, a shout-out on the show, and some secret benefits, like, you know, friends with benefits type stuff. So, thanks for supporting the show. We love you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Nakahomination is brought to you by Nakahomination patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahomination. For new episodes and content, visit nakahomination.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Auctions Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.